Democratic presidential hopefuls have until next Wednesday to qualify for the first presidential debate later this month. Candidates have to either poll at 1% in 3 approved polls or get donations from 65,000 people across 20 different states. And those requirements are drawing criticism, particularly from the candidates who have not made it. Joining us to look at all this is Michael Shearer, national political reporter for The Washington Post. Hi, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. And I want to start with these qualifications. Candidates, as we said, have to poll at 1%. And yesterday, the party announced that some polls would be excluded, which is not going over well with some candidates. Tell us what's going on there.
Yeah. So when they announced the rules, they basically, and this was in February, they said you have to get at least 1% in 3 polls from a list of, I think, 18 news organizations between the beginning of the year and January 12th, next week. They did not make any distinction about what kind of polls. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the polls, the Washington Post ABC poll, asked an open-ended question. So instead of listing off multiple choice, here's 20 names, who do you support for president? They just asked people, who do you support for president? Now, the DNC had said privately earlier this year and then publicly for the first time yesterday that they don't want to take open-ended polls, which cuts out 2 of the news organizations they originally listed and effectively changes the rules that they announced in February. And that's going to affect really one candidate right now, Montana Governor Steve Bullock, whose 3rd qualifying poll for the debates was a January ABC Washington Post poll, who now doesn't have enough to qualify.
Okay, so there are 20 debate spots when you look at these debates over 2 nights, but there are 24 Democratic candidates. Who so far has qualified and who hasn't?
Well, the only 4 who have not yet met the polling threshold, which is the easier one to meet at, mm-hmm. at this point, are Seth Moulton, the congressman from Massachusetts, Wayne Messam, a mayor from Florida, and Bullock. And Mike Gravel is the other one. He's mm-hmm. listed sometimes in the list of 24. Some people say 23 candidates rank. Some people say 24. He hasn't really done any events, so he doesn't have much of a campaign organization, but he also is not yet qualified in the polls. 13 people have qualified both by polling and by meeting the 65,000 threshold. That number could go up by next week because a number of people are still trying to meet that deadline. If Bullock or Messam or Moulton are able to or Gravel are able to qualify by polling before next week, then there'll be a runoff to figure out who.
A runoff? How does that work?
Yeah. It's a little complicated, but in this case, it'll basically be the person with the highest polling. The problem is all these people are polling at 1%, so how they actually figure that out will be complicated, and they may actually have to bring in the number of donors to do a sort of tie break there. But if Bullock gets a 3rd poll, for instance, before next week, then there'll be 21 people who have qualified and only 20 will be able to appear on stage.
You haven't said the word superdelegate yet. I assume they don't get involved if there's like a tiebreaker to the tiebreaker.
Yeah, no. Although it is true that Democrats tend to have incredibly complicated rules in the name of fairness, and that is proving itself once again.
And just more on the logistics here, how will it work once the debate stages are set? How do they decide who gets to go on which night?
Well, so originally they said it would be basically a random drawing. They didn't want to have a big table and a little table like Republicans did in the last cycle. But they have since modified that to be somewhat more complicated in the name of fairness. They will now have 2 drawings. One drawing will be people who are polling higher, and it will divide them between the 2 nights. And then they'll have a 2nd drawing for people who are polling lower to divide them between the 2 nights. And the idea is that they didn't want to randomly put all of the top-tier candidates mm-hmm. on one stage and bottom-tier candidates on the other stage. So they're sort of putting in some insurance. What that means practically is that, you know, the names that most Americans know and are interested in right now, the ones who've polled, you know, above 5%, mm-hmm. May not appear on the same stage, or 1 or 2 of them may be cut out. They won't be able to appear on a stage with the 2 people who are polling the best right now, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. And so there's some suspense in how this will all sort out.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the Republican primary last time around. So I want to listen back to what that was like when there was a big debate stage filled with a lot of candidates. August 2015, the first Republican primary presidential debate. It was also divided into 2 separate sessions. And here's a moment where you got 10 candidates on the stage, and the Fox News moderator Bret Baier threw the first question out to everyone, and he asked candidates to raise their hands, and only one person did. You can probably guess who that was. Let's listen.
Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person. Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now if you won't make that pledge tonight. Mr. Trump. So, Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing on a Republican primary debate.
I fully understand.
Okay, so there he is drawing boos minutes after that debate started. Now, I wonder, looking back at that and knowing that he's now the president of the United States, how important is it in a big field on a stage to get attention, even if it's negative attention, in a debate like this?
Well, that was President Trump's real innovation in the 2016 race, and it clearly has benefited him not just in the election but in the White House. He continues to sort of crave and do what he can to get attention every day. It's not clear, though, I think that would work with a Democratic electorate in quite the same way. The parties tend to think differently and look for different things in their candidates this early in the process. The driving question among Democrats right now, more than issues, more than personality, more than experience, is really who can beat Trump. There's a real desire among Democrats to figure out who can beat Trump. And I expect that these first two debates will be debated along those lines, and there'll be different ways that different candidates have of making their case. And some of them will be showing weakness in the people at the front of the line right now, especially Joe Biden. And some of it will just be trying to distinguish yourself in some way as someone who could stand there with the president, a year from now.
I bet, though, that there will be at least one question in the debate, which is a raise your hand question, because it is an easy way to see if anybody stands out in the crowd. There will also be people, of course, who don't get a lot of time in these debates. I want to listen to one more clip. This is from the first Democratic presidential primary debate in October 2015 on CNN, which had five candidates: Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, Lincoln Chafee, and Jim Webb. And here's a moment when CNN's Anderson Cooper interrupted O'Malley, and you can hear Jim Webb try to edge his way in.
Governor O'Malley, just for the record, on the campaign trail, you've been saying that Secretary Clinton is always quick for the military invention. Senator, Secretary Clinton, you can respond.
Well, first
Anderson,
of all,
can I get into this discussion at some point?
Yes, you'll be coming in next, but she was directly quoted.
Thank you. So. I've been standing over here for about 10 minutes trying. Okay. It's gone back and
Secretary,
forth over there.
Well, I am in the middle here, and lots of things coming from all directions.
I feel like there's going to be at least one person like poor Jim Webb in these debates.
There will, and that was Jim Webb's last debate of that cycle as well. It didn't end well for him. I think you're going to have at minimum 10 people on each stage, limited answers. Traditionally, there's a chance to respond if you're attacked, and what that means in practice is that the bigger names are attacked more often and therefore get more time to talk. I think a lot of the debate preparation over the next few weeks is going to be about, if you only have 3 minutes to introduce yourself here, what is the message you want to get across, and how do you want to deliver it? And each of those candidates will be practicing and refining and rehearsing those answers. And it may also be that the thing that we remember from these debates is the thing that no one prepared for, which we can't really predict and which will be spontaneous. And that's really what the debates provide, a chance to sort of catch candidates out, see how they think on their feet, and either perform or don't perform, which arguably is the thing that distinguished Trump in the Republican primary last time.
Well, I have to think that the candidate at the top of the polls right now, Joe Biden, is in a way the one that has the most to lose here, because all these other people, many of whom people in the country haven't seen much of, are finally going to get to see some of them, and maybe they will change their mind even if they like Joe Biden right now.
That's very possible. It's also possible he performs very well,
right,
and his rivals don't. It's also possible he ends up picking a lucky draw and finds himself on stage, which, with a bunch of people who have a real struggle, proving that they're likely to be elected. This is the first of 12 debate cycles that the DNC has planned. So we have a long road ahead of us. And, whoever the nominee is going to be is going to have to sit through a lot of these and perform in a lot of these.
Michael Shearer, national political reporter at The Washington Post. Thanks.
Thank you.